It's merger time.
What does corporate consolidation mean for you?
From APM, American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org.
Today is April the 2nd. Coming up, I'll talk with the mayor of Chicago about his new plan to upgrade the city's infrastructure.
Also, should the FDA start policing cosmetics?
And sippy cups with GPS.
Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Visa has dropped card processor Global Payments after a big data breach on Friday that compromised the credit card information of more than a million cardholders. Our own David Gura joins us now from Washington, D.C. Good morning, David.
Morning, Stacey.
Global Payments is what's called a payment processor. What exactly is a payment processor, and how does that fit into the whole credit card system?
All right, so you go and you buy a cup of coffee, you swipe your card, and I'm going to let Larry Berlin explain what happens next. He's with First Analysis.
Global Payments connects the merchant to the credit card company, to Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or Amex.
He told me to think of the payment processor as an intermediary, sort of a middleman. It's making sure you've got enough money or credit to buy that cup of coffee, and it's using data to make sure you're the person that you're claiming to be. And all of this happens, all this information is going back and forth, Stacey, from the coffee shop to the payment processor to the credit card company to the bank and all the way back in just a blink of an eye.
Well, speaking of coffee, actually, I tried to buy a coffee yesterday with my Visa debit card, and it was rejected. And I found out later that Visa had some kind of outage. Was that related to the data breach?
It was not related to the data breach. Visa says that it was just doing some maintenance. It was updating its system yesterday, and for like 30 or 45 minutes, the system was down. But the thing is that when something big like this happens, when a network goes down or there's a security breach, it's a big deal. We notice it. We talk about it. We worry about it. Jules Baracis is an analyst with Celent, and he says there's really only so much we can do.
I would argue that almost no matter what security you put in place, breaches will continue to happen because hackers always work out new ways on how to get into the data system.
And hackers want to get into that data system because that's where the money is. It's this big treasure trove for hackers. I mean, think about it, Stacey. There are 800 million cards in the U.S. and there are only 300 million people.
Wow. Well, that is a lot to think about. David Gura in Washington. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
The nation's largest manager of pharmacy benefit plans is getting even larger. Express Scripts just finalized a merger with Medco. The combined company will serve 135 million Americans. But a group of local pharmacies and drug chains says that is too big. Marketplace's senior business correspondent Bob Moon has more.
Brace yourself for less choice. That's what an ad from the pharmacy group says will happen.
They'll be able to tell me when, where, and how to get my medicine.
They'll be able to squeeze big profits out of patients.
Medco Express Scripts?
Too big.
But Brian Henry, a spokesman for Express Scripts, says the goal is beefing up bargaining power.
What pharmacy benefit managers like Express Scripts and Medco do, and we think we'll be able to do more of in the future, is accelerate our ability to help drive down costs and help improve the quality.
One way to do that, he says, is giving consumers a cheaper option of buying their drugs by mail. But the pharmacy groups complain Express Scripts and Medco combined could funnel even more business to their own in-house mail-order firms, freezing out the local pharmacies. Henry insists that's not so.
Home delivery is an option that we offer to clients and patients to opt into.
Don Bell speaks for the National Association of Chain Drugstores. He says the merger could doom many corner pharmacies.
Pharmacies will have to cut service, cut their hours, have forced layoffs of employees, and even closing of pharmacies.
And with reduced competition, he argues, consumers could end up paying more. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Well, the Express Scripts Medco merger wasn't the only corporate marriage story of the morning. The beauty and fragrance company Coty went public with its offer to buy rival Avon for about $10 billion. That is an offer that so far has been rejected by Avon. Julia Coronado is chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she's with us now from New York to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
So these are two pretty big mergers or potential mergers. What's going on?
Well, this is one thing companies can do with their cash, and we know that companies are sitting on these enormous cash piles. So one thing that they can do is buy each other, buy their competitors, and consolidate. And so that's what we're starting to see.
And when they do that, are they buying each other at the expense of hiring people?
Well, possibly. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with the cash. You can hire people. You can invest in new capital, new projects. You can pay it back to your shareholders through dividends, or you can buy back your shares. And so this is one thing you can do. It's not something that does send a super strong signal to the macro economy that companies are using their cash just to consolidate and become more efficient.
And Julia, is this a larger trend, or is this just two things happening on the same day that are similar?
I think we are going to see more mergers and acquisitions. Again, it's a sensible thing to do with your cash, and companies have so much of it. There's no reason we shouldn't see more and more in other industries as well.
Julia Coronado, Chief Economist with BNP Paribas, thanks as always.
It's a pleasure.
Right now, the Food and Drug Administration doesn't police cosmetics because cosmetics aren't considered food or drugs. But three separate bills in Congress could change that, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
There's lead in lipstick, and we don't even know what's in perfumes. If Congress passed the toughest bill it's considering, manufacturers would have to spell out what makes scented shampoos and aftershaves smell good. Regulators would ban ingredients linked to cancer or reproductive problems. Janet Noodleman is policy director at the Breast Cancer Fund. She says these proposals would change the face of the cosmetics business.
Because currently there is so little regulation of the industry, it's a buyer beware situation.
Noodleman wants the FDA to decide what's safe or natural, because right now those words are thrown around freely in commercials. Mary Gilbert is an industry analyst with Imperial Capital. She says prices could go up if the FDA made companies switch around their product formulas.
If they have to change it, it could be more expensive with the new ingredients that they're substituting.
But Noodleman says some lotions and shampoos sold here have ingredients that Europe has already banned. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Privacy advocates today protested a plan to massively extend eavesdropping powers of the British government. It wants to monitor all phone calls, email, and web traffic in the UK to keep up with hackers and other criminals. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The British government can already find out who its citizens are contacting electronically, but they have to seek permission from a court. The planned new law would do away with that requirement. Critics say it would make it easier for the government to engage in mass eavesdropping. Telecom and internet companies would have to record the destination and time of every phone call, email, text message, and website visit from the UK. They'd have to keep those records for 2 years and make them available on demand to the government. Even some government supporters are aghast. Here's lawmaker David Davis talking to the BBC.
They don't need this law to protect us. This is an unnecessary extension of the ability of the state to snoop on ordinary innocent people in vast numbers.
But privacy campaigners may well face a struggle to overturn the plan. There's much more tolerance of government surveillance in the UK than in the US. There are so many closed-circuit television cameras operating here that it's reckoned the average Londoner is caught on film 300 times a day. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And now, Stacey, to an incredible technological advancement in the world of sippy cups. The company Munchkin.
This I have to hear.
Yes, Munchkin Incorporated has released a press release that says it is adding GPS technology to sippy cups so that parents who buy the trackable cups can then download the My Sippy Cup Finder app for their smartphone and zero in on the cup's location within 60 seconds. Now, if that sounds too good to be true, I'm sad to say that it is. The press release.
Oh, I was starting to think of all the things I wanted GPS devices in, like my keys.
Well, you know, I'm sure that it's technologically possible. I just don't think the necessity is there quite yet. The press release, it turns out, went out yesterday, which was April 1st.
Oh, my gosh. I completely forgot about April Fool's Day. The sippy cup scandal. It's our modern day war of the worlds.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to Chicago, where Mayor Rahm Emanuel wants to spend $7 billion on a total makeover of the city, a new runway at O'Hare Airport, upgrades to rail and bus service, and a rebuilding of the city's water and sewer system. Some of the money will come from new fees, some from cost savings, and some from a new public-private infrastructure bank. For an extended Midday Extra interview, we are joined now by the mayor himself. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, tell us about your grand $7 billion plan.
Well, it's 30,000 jobs in the next 3 years. And as I like to say, whether it's from the streetlights above or to the sewage lines below and everything between, we're literally going to build a new Chicago, all paid for. But none of it includes a sales tax increase or a property tax increase.
And some of it is this idea of a public-private partnership. And I want to ask you about that because I think a lot of people who live in Chicago, when they hear that, they're going to think of the famous deal with the parking meters and privatizing the parking meters, and now the city doesn't get any money from them.
No, well, here's the difference. Some of the facilities, cultural center, it's 100 years old. When we're done, we're going to save about $30,000 a year in energy costs, but we still own the cultural center. We're not privatizing it. We're just literally using private money to build out the energy efficiency. There's about $1 million worth of energy savings work to be done that will pay out $100,000 a year in savings and for energy costs. But on the very day I announced it, to create these 30,000 infrastructure jobs, Washington passed the 9th extension of the transportation bill.
Yeah.
The last real one was 2005. Who would ever tie their city's economic destiny to that dysfunction?
Well, when you look at your vision for the future of Chicago, I think back to your predecessor, Mayor Daley, and his wife, Maggie Daley, heading off to Paris and seeing flowers everywhere and then coming back and putting flowers all over the city of Chicago. Where do you look for inspiration?
Well, you learn a lot from all different types of mayors who are doing different things. Literally, some of the retrofit we're doing is an idea that your mayor in L.A. gave me, and the mayor of Vancouver gave me. All of us learn from each other. And I start from the premise, let me say this. I don't create jobs. I create the conditions for job growth. And the job growth conditions I'm trying to create is a modern infrastructure so the economy is efficient. One of our selling points is it's very convenient to live in a city and get to work because of our mass transit system. But if my mass transit system is not working at top speed, that advantage gets lost. And I won't let that happen.
Well, one of the disadvantages of your city right now, it appears to be, is that it's got a reputation, the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, for being a high tax place to do business. Is that hurting you right now?
Well, as you know, in my budget, we did not raise any taxes. In fact, we cut them. And we balanced the budget, and we put $20 million back in the surplus. And here's my view. Having a smart and educated workforce matters. Having a modern infrastructure matters. Having a transparent government so government's not too intrusive on the process of starting a business and operating a business. Does tax matter? Yes. But if everybody leaves in the economic development discussion a trained and educated workforce out of the discussion, you're not having a real discussion. If you're not having a discussion that includes whether you have a modern airport that allows you to get anywhere in the world directly or anywhere in the country directly, you're not really having a serious discussion about economic development. So my view is taxes are part of the discussion, not the discussion.
You spent a lot of your time as White House Chief of Staff getting the health care overhaul passed. If the Supreme Court strikes it down, what do you think is the next step for health care reform?
I appreciate the question. First of all, I'm going to focus on Chicago. Second of all, I don't deal in what ifs. So the court will make their ruling, and then we'll deal with what that is. But the president made a decision in America's both its interests on both economic and social and fiscal priority. It was the right thing to do, and he saw it through and accomplished something the country had been debating for a long time. But as it relates to how the court's going to rule, I don't deal in hypotheticals until they will make it a reality.
Favorite deep dish pizza in Chicago, Mayor?
I have a lot of – I'm fortunate to have a lot of culinary choices here in the city of Chicago, and I welcome you back to not only keep eating our deep dish pizza but all our culinary since we have more – 5-star rated Michelin restaurants in any other city, equaling New York. So come enjoy our city. And if you could, come spend some more money.
Rahm Emanuel is the mayor of Chicago. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for taking the time.
It is tax time. Jeremy, have you done your taxes yet?
I have. I feel like I get asked that question once a week now. Every time we do a story about taxes.
I know. Well, I have not done my taxes yet. I'm really bad about it. But, you know, obviously it means tracking down all of your receipts and your pay stubs. And of course, we all pray that we do not get audited. But who actually gets audited and why? Sarah Gardner has that story for us.
The IRS audits just a little over 1% of tax returns every year. And yet, the mere thought of it...
Have you ever been through an audit?
No.
It's hell. It's the financial equivalent of a complete rectal examination.
Yep, on Seinfeld, Jerry gets audited after donating $50 to a fake charity. Well, in reality, a measly $50 won't raise an IRS eyebrow. But claiming, say, a third of your income in donations to World Peace and Hunger probably would. Roberto Sedano of Long Beach, California, has been audited in real life.
The feeling wasn't the most pleasant.
Sedano got a letter from the tax man after claiming his mom and dad as dependents.
At that point, yeah, we were all living together. I was still single, and I was covering most of the expenses, so that's how I ended up claiming them.
Sedano says he won that one after supplying the IRS with affidavits and other documents, but veteran tax expert Joseph Anthony says more common on the IRS hit list, the self-employed.
Schedule C filers are really big targets because Schedule C filers seem like they're having a lot of fun sometimes.
Anthony says he's seen enough audits to conclude a few things. One, the IRS believes the self-employed cheat, underreporting income and claiming expenses that aren't strictly work-related. Two, regardless of your employment status, a lot of round numbers or double zeros will raise red flags. So will tax returns that report business losses year after year. And three, the more you earn, the greater your chances of a tax man encounter.
Because after all, you're where the money is.
Anthony's advice? Keep careful records, log your mileage, keep all your receipts. IRS agents still favor the paper kind, he finds. And don't brag about your clever tax tricks on Facebook. IRS agents use social media, too. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, do you need a way to shake up your lunch break? How about disco lunch? A company called Lunchbeat started the trend in Sweden, and it spread to other European cities. Jeremy, what do you think about Lunchbeat?
I think that's a great idea. I think there should be more dancing all the time.
I guess people show up on their lunch breaks, they dance for a few minutes, and they grab a sandwich, and a ticket costs about $14. And there is only one rule in Lunchbeat. Jeremy, yep. Can you guess what it is?
No.
You have to dance.
No wallflowers allowed.
No wallflowers.
Everybody has to get off the sidelines and into the ring.
I know. It kind of sounds great. I guess people just dance for 10 minutes, grab a sandwich, and go back to work.
I don't know why they need the sandwich. Just do the dancing.
Yes. Well, I guess you don't want to go back to work hungry.
That's true. You're going to burn a lot of calories with that dancing.
That's right.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.